you were in an office, you wouldn't walk around with a bag on your head.
The world goes remote.
The world's going remote and they're doing it wrong.
Hey, and welcome back to the No Frids podcast. I'm Jess Brown, one of your hosts. On today's episode, Willie and I kind of talk about a myriad of different things, from working remote, what it's like to be a father and a parent during these uncertain times, and the things that have us excited about the future. So we really hope you enjoy this episode. The world goes remote, but nobody's doing it quite the way of like just a normal remote. Like, yeah, everybody, I mean,
the world's going remote and they're doing it wrong.
They're doing that. And then they're also for the first time homeschooling their children or whatever that is. So like they just got thrown completely into the world that you and I already know.
For the first
time, just left work on Friday, like everything's normal. And then Monday morning, their whole worlds are upside down right now. So,
I mean, I feel like the last time you and I talked about it, I was, you know, it was starting to get real for us. Mm-hmm. Like things were shutting down, grocery stores were, getting completely looted. It felt like, my Trader Joe's all of a sudden had a line to get into it. And I remember asking you and you're like, nothing's going on here.
Yeah.
Everything's fine.
And now we have nothing. We have absolutely nothing.
So how is that, you know, I mean, for you, you're in Illinois. Right. I'm in, you know, the western part of Southern California. So I'm literally on the ocean. Not bragging or anything, but it is nice.
Right.
So you're surfing corn waves and I'm but it was interesting to kind of see the difference of the ripple effect.
When it hit here, we had started doing like a natural preparedness kit more for tornadoes, things like that. So a couple weeks ago, started getting that stuff ready. Because honestly, I think we thought this might stay more isolated to the coast or mm-hmm. bigger metropolis type areas or melt.
Yeah.
But the, I want to say it was, yeah, Saturday. Right after we talked, I ran to the store, no toilet paper, no frozen food. All that's left, and this is the funniest part, fresh fruits and vegetables everywhere, except for potatoes, and everything else gone, which cracks me up because it's like, you guys know that those veggies are in those frozen packs that you just completely ransacked. All you have to do is cut them up and put them in a bag and then put them in your freezer anyway. Like it's bizarre, but it doesn't even look like for you guys right now, like there's anything left except for like some of the worst, like substitute foods or things like that. Things that nobody ever bought.
Yeah. The interesting thing is we had that original onslaught, but really, I think what it's done, it just has it attacked the supply chain, mm-hmm. you know, and you know, any supply chain's not ready for what happened, but that supply chain's still there.
Yep.
And so now the stores are getting stocked back up as business as usual. And I mean, my hope is that people get a little bit more tact, a little more thoughtfulness in how they're shopping. I mean, it's probably way too high of a hope. Based on what I've seen so far.
Yeah.
But we went, you know, looking at the store, there seems to be more stuff, but like even going to the store is not really what we want to do right now. Mm-hmm. Just the narrative of this whole thing is changing. Now there's people that are my age or younger that are dying from this pandemic. And it used to, you know, the narrative before was like, oh, it's just for, you know, old men in their 80s that smoke 2 packs a day. Mm-hmm. Now it's like, no, that's like a 34-year-old healthy guy that is stuck in a coma because he went to Disney World or whatever. whatever, and or now he's dead, or
yeah,
you know, it's a bit terrifying. And I think the thing that causes me a lot of pause is that is when people I trust the least are saying everything's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. It's just like, no, I don't trust you. Do you not know that I don't trust you?
Right.
And, it's been a really, I don't know. I don't have a ton of words for it, but it's been a whack time for sure.
Yeah. And what's funny for me is a lot of people are like, oh, at least in Illinois right now, schools are supposed to quote unquote go back, on the 31st. And it's like, no, it's not going to happen. I don't know why everybody thinks that, but like, that's what
it will.
It's like, everybody's like, oh, it's just gonna be 2 weeks. We'll be good. It's like, you really need to look at the global news on all of this, because it's not true. I can't stand the people that are calling it one, the Chinese virus or the China virus, because that just completely irritates me and could be a podcast by itself. And the other one is like, it's just the flu. And like, even if that's true, like if that was like all the worse it was, I just had that version of a flu 3 weeks ago. I thought I was dying. Like, I've never had it that bad in my life. So if that is what it is, then I'm not going to take this one lightly either. But I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's created a new normal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're in the midst of a new normal. The way that you think about your finances, the way that you think about your job, mm-hmm. you know, who's your employer, is completely changing. And I think in my area, schools are done. Mm-hmm. Like, they're saying good luck on summer break.
Yep.
That's kind of the norm now. And from what I understand, the National Guard is starting to kind of operationalize on the coast to set up quarantine camps.
Wow.
From what I've heard.
Yeah.
So there's a lot more military helicopters flying around, and, you know, it's weird. It's like my 9-year-old shouldn't know the word quarantine.
Yeah.
but it's like on their lips, you know, and it has been. There's been a lot of positive humanity things that I've seen come out of it. It's jarred a lot of good conversations with my kids about, you know, like, if we're going to get through this, like, there's a sense of like, you need to be on board, whether you understand what I as a father am saying or not.
Mm-hmm.
All the way down to simple things, because, like, you know, like, I don't know if it's happening for you, but for Allison and I, my wife, like, our stress level is going up. I mean, you can see on video, but like I have like bad psoriasis that kicks up when I have stress, and like my face is just like swollen. Like, I can see my cheeks through my eyes, and it's not because like the workload in my office has gone up or online, but there's just a lot of stress really being forced into a new norm. And I don't know what the future has in store, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it could be a spoof sickness. Right. It could be small, but that's not really the point.
No. And I think something that I keep thinking about is like, to that last point, if this was a spoof, it's not the last one. I think we need, and as a society, I think we need to understand that the way we've been doing things for a long time is not right. And now we're actually getting to the point now where we're seeing that. I mean, some of the stories that I've been seeing lately, and I've been sharing with my kids because they're hearing all the bad stuff. I'm even guilty of sharing the negative things because I want them to be informed on what's really going on out there, not what their friends are telling them, or necessarily even family. It's like giving them multiple sources of the same truth so they can come to conclusions on their own. Trying to find those beautiful, tiny little moments in all of this. But like you said, then it's all immediately kind of rooted back in like asking your kid to do the dishes. Like, I can't tell you how many times I've had an argument this week. Like, hey, buddy, go do the dishes. Oh, it's my sister's turn. Yeah, I don't care. She's busy with something else. There's a reason I'm asking you. And let's not turn this into a debate right now. Like, It's 15 minutes and you're good.
She's shearing the lamb in the backyard because like that's like now we're like raising her own sheep to build her own clothes because I don't know what's going on. You know, like things are literally changing on the fly. I mean, one of the positive things that I've seen too is like I check the air index, the air quality index on a regular basis because, you know, I live around LA in Orange County and usually it sits in the 90 to 95, like not so good air quality. And it's like in the low 40s, high 30s, even lower than that at times. So the signal is people are commuting a lot less. Air pollution is way down. You know, there's a message in this as a whole, as a society, is that our margins are so thin and, you know, we're so fixated on growth that I think it's gone too far. I think the pendulum has swung too far. I finished reading this book called Shoe Dog. Phil Knight wrote it, Nike. And his sentiment throughout the whole thing, like his theme, is if you're not moving or if you're not growing, you're dying. And I think this proves, like, I think there is a cap on growth. Mm-hmm. Like there is a season of, like there's a maxed out amount of growth that we as a society can handle, because when these things come, like exponential growth models don't do well in pandemics.
Right.
I mean, I don't know many societies that do, but like it, like our stock market has gone, I mean, just absolutely crashing down and people are just in a full on panic and frenzy right now. Mm-hmm. And it's like, wait, if we were growing and things were going so well, like, wouldn't there be something for this? And it's not there. So it's really, it's changed a lot of thoughts in my head, you know, sustainability.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you're not sustaining, if you're not being responsible, you're dying.
Yeah. I mean, and that's beyond just your impacts, like your footprint on sustainability. I think a lot of people have been taught to live without way beyond their means. And right now they can't travel. They can't go out to eat every night. I think everybody's going to come out of this in one way or another with a different view on who they are. I mean, I can remember with my great grandparents who went through the Depression. I would go over to my grandmother's once a month or so, and she would teach me how to cook or bake something new. That was just like our time to get to know each other and tell stories and whatever. But I've never seen anybody more diligent on putting butter back into the tub so it was never left out. Like, it was scraped off the knife to the point that it looked clean because it was all back in there, or no water waste, you know, like spilling out over the top of anything. Like, everything was very slow, deliberate, and without an ounce of waste. And I asked her once, I'm like, we don't do that at home. Why do you do that? And then she proceeded to tell me about the time when they never knew when the next meal was coming, or if they were going to get milk, or, you know, all those things. And, that, and what's weird is now I get it. I mean, we haven't hit that point yet, but
no.
It's, I think it's a good reminder for all of us. It's almost like Mother Nature's asking for a reset in a way. Or just society and the norms that live in. Like, we've lived very too like privileged.
I almost feel like a sense caution in the words that I'm saying and the statements that I make during this time, because it's just so unknown.
Right.
And I just want to be cautious about what I think I know versus what I don't know. And like, that's a good story of your grandmother. I have a similar one. My wife and I moved to Seattle in 2001 and, we were in Chicago and then, ended up going to, you know, across to Seattle, and we lived in my grandmother's basement. We'd been married for like a year, and it was Easter time, and like I got like a ham for Easter, and I threw it away. That once we were done, I threw the ham hock, the bone, away. And it was like two separate flats. So like my grandmother lived upstairs and we had an apartment to ourselves downstairs. It was like fully on its own. And she came downstairs and found the ham bone in the trash, pulled it out and made split pea soup from it. And, you know, cause there was so much left on it. Mm-hmm. I remember just being like, whoa, that is like next level. Like she's digging stuff out of the trash. And it's like, because she grew up in that, she grew up in that era of need and necessity, and I had no clue. So I think there is going to be some of that coming along right now, where there's just a lot more questions about the future.
Yeah.
The one thought that I have too, and this is kind of a segue a little bit, but I've been, you know, I'm in a leadership role for where I am. In my company, and I work in digital, like you do, digital, whatever that means, but product design. And, you know, I work for a company that is trying to pursue the proverbial digital transformation. And, you know, all the resorts are shut down. And so there's a ton of furloughs going on, which is like a nice way of saying layoff, I think.
Yeah.
And there are bailouts coming for hospitality and airline industries. And I think the rule of the caveat is like, you can't accept the bailout money unless you don't, like if you lay a bunch of people off and you get the price cut of your capital expenses or operating expenses there. Is it CapEx? Or, I don't know, man. one of those X's, you know, and then you're not going to be able to get the bailout from the government. So the furlough is the answer. So in essence, people get a certain amount of pay and then they get their health benefits for a little bit further. But it's been really difficult to stand idle and watch by, because like if that were to happen to me, I mean, I have about a month before I'm a legitimate squatter in my house with my family. Like I make a good living. We survive, but like we don't have that, you know, 6 month bailout for us.
Right.
And one question that I think is going to be a question of the future is like future jobs, interviews. The question is going to be like, if you were interviewing me, I'd ask you like, you know, at the end of the interview and they say, hey, do you have any questions? Hey, how did your boss treat you during the pandemic?
Yep.
Coronavirus. How'd that go here? Mm-hmm. Were there layoffs? Did they furlough you? Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, that makes sense. What about the CEO and the rest of the C-level suite? Did they take any pay cuts to offset? And if the answer is no, or they don't know, I think it's going to really make a difference if you want a job there or not.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, look at the landscape. Like, Ed Bastian from Delta, forgo salary for 6 months. That guy makes a pretty good penny. Mm-hmm. And you see that in a lot of places. Like Nike is choosing to still pay their company, everybody, even though their doors are all shut down. Same thing with Apple.
Yep.
Facebook did, you know, they're all digital. A lot of them are remote, but they sent everybody to remote, and they gave everybody a 6 month bonus and then $1,000 check just to kind of like offset the negativity. They came in with hyper positivity.
Yep. I heard people were doing that too for setting up a home office. They got a certain amount of money so they could make the new space that they had to exist in be as comfortable as possible, either buy a nice chair or embracing it and supporting them through it instead of acting like it should just be business as usual, and even worse, work harder and longer, because now you're just at home and we know you have quote unquote nothing else to do. But
yeah. Well, I mean, the thing that I'm trying to drive is like there's a definite delta. There's a difference. There's like two trains of thought. And, you know, it's like Adidas CEO came on and said, you know, it's the easy thing to do to shut down. So our stores are staying open. in that moment, it solidified for me. I will never purchase another Adidas product for the rest of my life.
Yep.
Brand polarization right there. And then when Ed Bastian came out in Delta and said what he did, it was like, I'll never not fly Delta. I mean, that's just me, right? And Patagonia did the same thing. There's just some brands that are showing up and they're doing it right. And I know that there's money to be made, and you know, we live in a capitalist society, but like there's a point to say, this isn't just a company isolated thing. This is a worldwide thing, and we need to stick together, and it's going to pass. And so we're going to take a hit alongside of you. We're not just going to, you know, look out for our best interests and treat it like a quote unquote business only.
Yeah.
And it's like a true captain goes down with the ship. And some captains are not. Some captains are literally just chucking bodies off their ship to make their ship go down slower.
Yep. Yeah.
So I don't know.
How are you feeling just personally in the mix of all this? Like you said, you've got a ton of uncertainty right now. How's your mental health right now in this state?
I mean, it's hard to watch the conversations that are going on in my office, you know? But I, you know, in all honesty, like, I believe that I've been built and prepared for this type of stuff. Like it's been worse for me. Like in 08, when the economy crashed and I had a job as a Finnish carpenter living in Bend, Oregon, and no, you know, then there was a lot of work and there was no work. That was a dark era for me. But the difference between then and now is that I didn't have a trade necessarily then. Like now it's like I can, the thought of like, hey, when this thing, you know, passes, and say, for instance, I get laid off, which is a legit possibility for me, you know, every day is a new day. And, but I have a trade,
right?
You know, like I can be scrappy. I can be like, yeah, I can, you know, I can, you know, work on whatever project you have. And I can, you know, I can traverse through all these different industries, everything from like a tax company to a surf industry. Like they all need UX, they all need design. What I bring to the table is special and unique, and it transcends all industry. So I feel super fortunate and hopeful with that. And I believe that these things are, I mean, I believe in my core that these types of trials are refining moments, and they bring about some of the best fruit in our life. Like there's not many people who look back on hardships and think, I got nothing out of that.
Right.
I mean, 08 is like what formed me. It's what drove me. It's really what kind of transformed me from being a wimpy mental wimp into a man with grit and fortitude that can overcome a lot of things.
Yeah.
But like nobody walks into those things willingly. And if they do, it's like, it's, you know, those things only happen, I think, in the full extent when it's a blind side.
Yeah.
And this is a bit of a blind side.
Yeah. Yeah. How do you think you'll fare? I mean, on the other side of this, I mean, are you hoping that you come out 10 times stronger? Like, do you have almost like goals for yourself during this time of,
yeah,
how much you're going to let it affect you? How, you know, how resilient you are going to try to be? I mean, I'm asking because like for me, every day is different. Some days I feel like I'm on top of it. I can kill it. You know, doing this podcast, you know, these types of things are like really good for me, you know, like I just feel like I'm on top of my game in a way. And then other days, yesterday being one of them, I felt like just crawling back into bed and rolling over and showing up, you know, when this is all done, you know. So
yeah. Just,
I'm doing well some days. And
what makes you like, what triggers the like, what are some of the things that kind of trigger the, I want to crawl into bed. I want to be passive and let this thing pass through. Just curious.
Yeah. For that, it's the stuff that I can't control that other people have a lot more of the say on. And I feel like they're handling those situations poorly. And there's nothing I can do, truly nothing I can do to change that. And it's not even necessarily for me, like the amount of time I'm going to start to lose because we got to do all this stuff. It's my team. You know, I actually feel more for them during this time, I think, than I even do for myself or my family. It's like, I know I can't be the best version of myself right now if I'm not getting good sleep, getting outside, you know, all those things, which we now have no control over. And then supposed to be 100% on our A game every day, you know, and not have low tolerance. And I don't know. I feel like I'm always one meeting away from blowing up at the wrong person. I mean, yesterday, a couple things happened, and I actually just got in my car and drove around because I couldn't go out and run around. I didn't want to like come in contact with anybody and be respectful for that, because I have no idea if I've been around it or not. But like, I shouldn't be hitting that point right now. Like, I'm home with my family. You know, one thing that's beautiful is like my kids are not stressing me out. Like, they are being troopers. I mean, there's small arguments, things like that. But like, my stress is not coming from the home.
No,
at all. So
yeah, no, I agree. It's like, that's not where the stress is necessarily coming from. The version of me entering into my family is a lot less on his A game.
Yep.
Than normal.
Yeah.
Because my days are like literally starting 6-7, going and, you know, till 11 o'clock at night, and there's this sense of being on call constantly, and you don't want to be the guy that's like, bro, like, I'm with my family, because you're scared to be seen as that person who's not chipping in during this time.
Right.
And one of the things that I've been doing with my team, and just people in general, which has been really interesting, is that I've been using Zoom. I've been a fan of Zoom since Starbucks, Travel the World. It was like the one video conferencing thing that just always freaking worked.
Yep. And we're using it right now.
Huge, huge proponent of it. Yeah. So Zoom, you want to sponsor us? Like, I will plug you guys till the cows come home. You
know? Like, and right now it's ZM, the company, not
Zoom. I know. It's like, yeah, there's some company called Zoom that's just like skyrocketing in stock right now. And, you know,
they've been defunct for years. Yeah.
Our office uses Microsoft Suite and Teams, and it is just like the biggest dumpster fire of a program. It freezes my computer. Like, I can't see panels of people. It's a real disaster.
Yeah.
But what we've been doing as a team is, and you know, we get on and it's like, hey, no meeting. Let's just hang out.
Yep.
Let's want to talk. And literally, like, we'll allow for a period of just like awkward silence, like as if we are hanging out. And it's been helpful. I feel a good burst of energy from it. And it's like, I've been doing it with people that I don't work with that are just my friends. Mm-hmm. Like, I have friends that live up in Seattle that I paddle with. And I was like, hey, you guys need to, you know, log into Zoom. Let's all just hang out and talk.
Yeah.
You know, I just want to see how you're doing. And yeah, a phone call works, but like, there's something about seeing faces that is a lot of communication happens in facial expressions and laughter. And, you know, if you say something and I laugh, you get energy from seeing my smile.
Right.
And I mean, smiling is very healthy for our bodies and our energy. So we've been doing that a lot. And I agree with you on a lot of things that are out of our control right now.
Yeah.
Tons. There's so much out of our control. And yeah, that's probably the stuff that stresses me out the most.
Yeah. You know? And I don't think it's necessarily a concern of mine that I have to start over in this time, maybe go somewhere else. Like, that's not my worry for some reason. I think I'm insanely lucky to have a skill that I could easily just go into another company with and just start going, you know, either back to IC or leading a team. Like, I've been doing, especially in this day and age of remote, I've been a remote leader for almost 7 years now. So, like, I know this really, really well. And I was also a homeschool kid. So, like, not being around people is second nature, honestly, for me at this point. Mm-hmm. But I think what gets me with the stuff that's out of our control is the other people that I don't feel are adequately equipped. And I mean, and that goes back to like what we were talking about at the beginning. People are doing this wrong right now. There's some teams right now where I'm seeing where it's mandatory to be on video and you check in 4 to 5 times a day. And every meeting is a video call. And it's a, there was one company I saw where it's like, if you don't respond within 3 minutes to your supervisor, you could be on the line for your job at that point. Like, you have to communicate if you're on the phone, if there's any time that you're going to be gone for more than 20 minutes. Like, basically the whole, like, if your supervisor got up and walked around to see who was sitting at their desk working or not type of mentality. And it's just so unfortunate. I mean, I'm curious on your thoughts, but like
some of that's like, in my opinion, is just preemptive best practices for anybody who's remote. And so when I'm kind of laying it out for anybody who's been working in an office and they're kind of transitioning to remote, you know, I have a list of things that I recommend. Mm-hmm. And one of those things is like, be a part of like a normal working hour, like have a time frame where like, yes, you're here, you're committed, you're a part of this company for an allotment of time. Mm-hmm. And in a lot of ways on Slack, that is showing that bubble is filled, like you're online, you're available. And being a little bit more chippy, or noisy on Slack. So, you know, hey, how's it going? Things are good. Blah, blah, blah. This is what I'm doing here. Can you see this? Like, as a design person, you have the ability to kind of post things, share things, talk through things. And so there is an intentional amount of volume that I believe everybody needs to turn up. Yep. And I mean, I lead a team of like, you know, 9 people right now. And there are those that are a little bit noisier on Slack. And there are those that it's like, hey, hey, how you doing? Are you there? Hey, hello, hello. And it's like, if it happens with the same person constantly, there is a layer of response that you do need as a manager from your team.
Yep.
And so on top of that, to kind of connect that is like, yes, be there, be present. But then also communicate. You know, I have a couple of designers that are really good, like, hey, moving my car for street sweeping, be right back. I mean, it takes 2 seconds just to say something.
Yep.
Just communicate where you're going to be, right? Going to lunch. It's 1 o'clock because I don't have set lunch hours, mm-hmm. but like going to lunch, be back in an hour.
Yep.
Yesterday I had to go to the doctor. I was offline for 3 hours. So, hey, going offline for 3 hours, if you need anything, text me, mm-hmm. you know, if it's an emergency. And that in itself is just knowledge and insightful, because if you get hit with a project or somebody from above you is asking for something, and the way me as a leader, I don't do all of this stuff. I'm helping to kind of orchestrate and make sure things are happening. I need to know that people on my team are in, you know, proverbially in their seats so that they can execute on it. And I do not believe that everything needs to be a meeting. I'll get back to that in a second, but I am a firm believer that if for remote, cameras are on.
Yeah.
Like, it drives me insane when there's like 3 people, not cameras on. If you were in an office, you wouldn't walk around with a bag on your head. It just would be inappropriate.
Right.
And so if you're working, you should get up, get dressed, get your clothes on. You don't even have to put pants on. You could put shorts on, you know,
right.
But like from the midsection up, like you, we need to see your face.
Yeah.
And that's really important. So now how I combat everything being needing to be a meeting, is using like paper doc and having live files that you can put up and then see people contributing and building and conversing and talking through.
Right.
One of the worst things that I've been dealing with right now is I'm used to building paper docs with my team because that's how we function. And there's a whole new slew of people that are now working from home,
mm-hmm.
and their cadence and their rhythm is much different. So there's an ask from leadership. Hey, I need you guys to explore X, Y, and Z. So my first response is like paper doc entitled X, Y, and Z exploration.
Mm-hmm.
And I put it up and I literally in that moment, email it to the entire group that we're meeting with at that time. So I can hear all their email goes bling, 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 bling. And I can hear it come in. So they've got it. And in paper, I can see who has actually viewed it. Right. And so the ask is, hey, you have 3 hours to create some explorations around this. And then 3 hours go by and the only people that are exploring things are my team. And then the meeting is in 3 hours and then we get to the meeting and then the expectation from everybody else is like, all right, let's read what you guys have done line by line.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and for me, that's infuriating. That's like a complete and total waste of time because you should have read it on your own.
Yep.
And you should have contributed and had ideas. And if there's any dialogue, it's clarification of like, hey, I saw that you said this. Can you help me understand what that is? And then the person that made it can say like, oh, this is what I meant. And the other person goes like, either I agree with that or like, oh, that makes sense. That's great. Have you thought of this? It could be a really healthy thing mm-hmm. that actually removes the need for a ton of meetings.
Yeah.
And most meetings that I run into in corporate America are one person builds a thing. Everybody is completely turned off to that thing until that 45 minutes starts and you get 45 minutes of their focus and their attention.
Yep.
It's poor use of time.
Yeah, it is. I mean, we kind of do that at work as well. We use Google Docs, but we'll throw it in. Let's say it's a copy doc for a new page or whatever. People go in there and comment. And it's really cool to see. Like, if every one of those was an actual meeting, I can't imagine how long that meeting would be. I would imagine 2 hours at the minimum. Thankfully, because we've been a distributed team, we've had some of those practices already kind of there. But I can't imagine. I mean, it is getting difficult now watching like our big hubs now be completely dispersed from each other.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, they're doing a pretty good job. A lot of people are trying to embrace this. I think anybody that lives in Los Angeles would love to be able to work from home more so they're not commuting to work. So I think a lot of people are trying to see this as a good experience and try to learn from it so that maybe this is a new normal.
You want to talk about saving money.
Yeah.
What, like, here's an interesting thing. And I think this is like two worlds colliding. As a designer and as a developer, the one thing that you can bank on is that everything's changing all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Tools change, prototyping tools change, code languages are always changing.
Yep.
And so we've adapted to like, that's part of our acumen,
mm-hmm.
is that we learn new things. Like when I first started doing what I do, all my UI was made in Photoshop.
Yeah.
Photoshop is just that. It's for editing photos,
yeah.
Not making UI, but we didn't have any other tools.
Yep.
And then you get pretty good at it and you kind of hack way through. And I remember when Sketch came out and I was like, I just feel like I'm getting really sharp mm-hmm. in doing this in Photoshop as an individual contributor. I started later in the game. You know, this was like, what was it, 2013? You know, yeah. when this kind of started to transition like 7 years ago.
Yep.
And I remember like, I have to learn how to do, I remember thinking like, this is part of the job.
Yeah.
I have to learn this new thing. And I focused on it and I gave it time. And I worked for HP at the time when this all kind of went down and they still took in all of their projects via Photoshop or Illustrator to hand off to their developers. But what I forced myself to do was build everything in Sketch first, and then I transferred it over to Photoshop just to kind of learn how to write. It's like learning how to write with your left hand.
Yeah.
And so that being said, now you're working with this whole other group of people that they haven't really experienced that. it's kind of a bummer to me.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm looking around going like, you guys need to develop and grow and get new skills. And here's my main point. If that happened, why do we need offices?
Mm-hmm.
For what we do, we don't need an office.
Yeah. Yep. Well, and it's interesting.
You don't.
Yeah. I mean, our so old head of product was that way too. Like, he was like, I want your design team in LA all the time.
And makes no sense.
And, you know, my team's always been a distributed team. And it's like, all right, well, I mean, we can hire a couple of designers to be in the office. Like, I get that. Like, you would want them around the product team or whatever. But what's funny is during my time of getting to know him, we had some massive ups and downs. I mean, I'll be very candid, that called my boss up once and I was like, I think I'm done. I don't think I can do this anymore. And we all sat down and chatted and hugged it out, I guess. But at the end of the time, he's not with the company anymore, the guy that was head of product. We actually got to a point where we actually became, I think, friends, you know, towards the end of that. And he said to me, you know what? I think you had this figured out with remote, because he started to slowly go that way. And he realized, and I could be wrong, and I would love to chat with him about this sometime and he can set me straight, but being remote doesn't mean that you do what you do at the office every day, just at your home. You play a completely different game, which is what you're saying. Like, you don't, you don't tap people on the shoulder all day, or, you know, headphones on and don't respond to anybody, but they know you're there because you're sitting there and they can see you.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole nother level, soft skills related. People related, like you said, reaching out. Like, my team is insanely good at just reaching out to the other guys on the team, talking about music, yeah, family, biking, surfing, you know, all of that. And it's weird because within one of our guys is with, I think, only been around for about 6 months. I think we all feel like we know him just as well as if we had sat in an office with him every day. But
yeah,
you're being very intentional. And I think that's a skill that you have to learn. Like you said, Photoshop to sketch, you have to learn it. Key cuts or the shortcuts are completely different in the app. I can't tell you how many times, if I go back to Illustrator and I'm hitting something, I'm like, why isn't that turning? Oh.
Well, I mean, dude, take a dump on Adobe. Their key commands are different between their friggin' programs. Mm-hmm. So, like, just there's like, I can't wait for that shit to sink. Like, Adobe, I don't want your sponsorship. We, you know, you and Microsoft can go down. The quality of products that you guys put out, they're just like heaping piles of garbage.
I will say, I'm impressed with the new mobile Microsoft products that they put out. But yeah, I don't.
Oh, whatever, Jess. No.
I was, but the part that's interesting for me, because I started in design a little bit before you, as there was an era of Macromedia being a company, which was Flash, Dreamweaver, and Fireworks. And I loved Fireworks, which is really not a whole lot different than Sketch now. So I had to go from Fireworks to Photoshop to Sketch. And you're going to hate me for this, but I've been using Figma for the last three projects that I'm on. But, like, I also just wanted to learn it because it's like, well, maybe Sketch won't
make
it, you know, and I probably not, but
I just don't know the problem that Figma is solving. That's the thing.
For me, it's only just been,
it totally made sense. Yeah. You know, like, how many developers wanted to punch me in the face when I would use Photoshop to kind of use a gradient on a photo, or to kind of dismiss, you kind of fudge the lines, and they're just like, you're an idiot. Like, this doesn't work in code. Like, the amount of time it takes to do this. And so Sketch, what it did is it provided a set of limitations that translated better to my partners in development.
Yep.
And I liked working from that zone. Like, Photoshop was like, I lived in this like mystical wizard land that I could do the craziest stuff. And then I'd hand it off to a developer and they'd be like, dude, are you smoking crack? Like, this, do you know how much time this will take to do? Like, do you want to ever see this project get the light of day? Like, you're an idiot. Yep. And so I'm pretty pragmatic with everything that I do in the design realm, you know, mm-hmm. like I believe that there's like 50 different ways to resolve design. You know, I don't get super bent around or, you know, hung up on certain things. Like, I'm not a prima donna prissy critique of design. Like, is it working? Are people completing tasks? That's rad.
Yeah.
You know, what they feel about it could literally give a shit.
Yeah.
I don't care what they feel. I want to make sure that they're getting through and converting, and we can work towards elegance later. But, and, you know, that's not for everybody, but you know, I just want to know like, what's the problem people are trying to resolve.
Yeah.
And, yeah. So I don't know where I'm going.
Well, I think something that you said that was like,
bring me back to this.
What was interesting that you said earlier was we've been conditioned to change and learn constantly. And especially in this time, I think that's a very, very valuable skill. Because that the ability to learn new tools, new ways of doing things, I think is the most valuable thing as a person you can do. Never accepting anything for what it is and always trying to push it a little bit further and learn a bit more. I think that would be an interesting, I wonder if they teach that in any way, shape or form, you know, at school. I know that like higher education, it's always like never stop learning, you know, once you leave, you know, this campus, you know, keep this hunger for learning and whatever. And I know every teacher will say that for the rest of their life, but I'm curious what it actually takes for a person.
It's a caveat. It's not, for me, it's like learning for learning sake is one bucket.
Right.
But I work with a lot of young designers, and when I see that, cause then they're all like, they have all the time in the world, you know, they don't like, they go home and they're like Googling all the latest design stuff and finding things, like they have no life. And so that's what they do. And that's where their kind of identity is. And that's cool. But what I see is when they kind of pull that and they understand it and they pull it into the process, and I see, you know, that designer used this tool, and I can quantifiably see the difference that designer made mm-hmm. in the process. And that's where I go, I'm going to go learn that.
Yeah.
Right. And this happened to me while I was actually at Starbucks, and on a different, this isn't like some groundbreaking skill set, but I had a design director at the time. He was trying to communicate something to like a whole group of people that weren't designers, marketing people, loyalty people. And he was just, in essence, saying, here is an anatomical shift that we're making in the UI. It's going from A and it's going to B. And every other communication form that I saw before this just fell flat on its face. Like nobody got it. There was a million questions and there was finger pointing and all this stuff. And he used Keynote, magic move in Keynote. And it was just like this really fluid shift of anatomy. And my, you know, one of my designers, Glenn, and I both looked at each other and we go, he who holds the power of Keynote holds the power. And it was at that moment where I'm like, I'm going to become a friggin' wizard at Keynote.
Yeah.
And it has not, you know, like I've really focused hard into like how I make my presentations really simple, clean, and concise on Keynote. Animations and movement and things go a really long way. And I, you know, it wasn't like it's something you can just pick up on because it's jacked up program. Like things go wrong in it. You have to learn its like little tricks and nuances when things don't move right.
Mm-hmm.
So, and so when I see that stuff, I'm like, I'm leaning into that. Mm-hmm. I want that, you know? And so when people don't is where I find myself just like, I'm confused. Like, why wouldn't you use, you would rather have a meeting to read a paper together then just do it on your own time and then have the meeting be beneficial, thought-provoking stuff like building and critique. Like your meeting is actually an hour in the past.
Yeah.
Like it's slow.
That's a great way of thinking about it.
We're more efficient this way.
Yeah.
Like you're like we have to spend the entire meeting just catching you up to speed. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you use the tool the way it was supposed to be used, like, not only would you be caught up to speed, but you'd have some provocative, forward-thinking additions to bring to the table. Mm-hmm. And I don't understand why people don't want to do it.
Well, I had a conversation with my CEO last night where we're talking about this new project. And I was like, I can show you what we've explored years ago on some of this stuff, or I can give you a brand new batch of things to look at in a couple days. And he said something where he was like, yeah, that would be great. I would love to see the new ideas, but I would also love to see the old ones so I can at least get up to where you are, like, see what you've already known and agree with you that those were good ideas for that time. But he's like, I don't want to suggest things that you've already gone down the path of and said, you know what? Nope, this was not good. You know, and that's something that's, I'm always very happy when that's the type of conversation you can have.
Here's the thing. I think that it does, right? So you and I start a company. Say we do.
Let's do it.
And the way that we work together is really, it's really muddy. Like, there's not these very clear processes. It's like, hey, let's do this. It works. Hey, let's change this. This wasn't working as well. Hey, let's adapt. Let's change. Let's move. Let's pivot. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's like, when you get into these big organizations, you start setting up these, like, you know, silos in a sense. And I know there's better language for it. I'm not the best at it, but you start setting up these patterns and these rhythms of work that don't even come close to reflecting how you would work as a normal, like, scrappy startup. Let's keep the lights on. And so, like, there's this, like, total separation that happens that I find to be really intriguing. And then, like, when you try to bring it back together, it's like, it's labeled disruptive, or it's labeled, you know, a distraction. And in reality, like, if like right now, like during this whole pandemic, like, all companies are in a zone of, like, having to rethink the way that they do business and rethink the way that they engage their customers. And the organization that they have set up is for an old model, and they need to pivot and understand what's going on in this new model. And that requires the ability to kind of shake, like, normative procedure up a little bit. And I think people that get really hung up on procedures and, you know, like, my team laughs at me all the time. I never write emails, ever. Like, if I write an email, people are like, whoa, what'd you write an email for? You know, I think it's the worst form of communication.
Yeah.
Period.
Yep.
It just covers your ass from an HR perspective. But, like, other than that, like, if you're actually building something and you need to get something out the door, it's the worst.
Yep.
Which brings me to my next point. Pay structures, right?
Yeah.
Like, think about it from this, like, you and I started a company, how I would pay people. It'd be very, very transparent.
Yeah.
But I'd have, like, you know, character A gets paid this much because character A has shipped this many monetizing things.
Yep.
They've been a part of shipping things. Mm-hmm. Character B gets paid less because they've only shipped this many things. Mm-hmm. That's just it.
Yep.
You get paid based on what you ship and what is succeeding.
Yeah.
And so, like, if I pay a designer $600,000 a year, which is insane, but he can scoreboard me and say, look at what I've shipped, and look how it's monetizing, and look how I can justify what I've done. Mm-hmm. I will never hide that.
Yeah.
Somebody who hides in bureaucracy and meetings and minutia that has actually never shipped anything don't deserve to get paid to the same regard as people that are shipping things.
Yeah.
And shipping things is really the proof in the pudding for me. Mm-hmm. That's what makes you stand apart.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, everything is, I couldn't agree with you more, because a lot of people, like, I come in, I show up every day. Cool. That's the requirement of having a job. Mm-hmm. Everything you do beyond that point is what your value is, you know, at least for me. Like, that's just how I see it. So, I mean, that would be a fun way to do it. I mean, I've always been afraid of other people knowing how much I make. I don't know what that is, but I mean, you and I talked about our salaries a couple weeks ago, and all that did to me was like, oh, I've got room to go, you know, and, or I've got, you know, like, you know, even if we were completely even, I would still just, it would just be that gauge of, oh, cool. Mm-hmm. But look at what Willie's doing to earn that. Am I doing that? You know, and it's not even out of competition. It's out of respect in a way of, I want to contribute as much as you are contributing to earn that amount. Like there's a certain amount of input you have to do and output to deserve X. So I don't know.
In a lot of ways too, like if you look at what you know, like take Starbucks, for instance, you know, they do an entire UX cleanliness refresh on things. And the business goes from 3% of annual revenue all the way up to 12% of annual revenue. For a company like Starbucks, like that delta is massive mm-hmm. money. And so if you can continue to do that, if I'm an owner of a business, like, and there's a team that is continuing to like contribute incrementally like that, like I'm going to pay them and I'll pay them, and I will brag about them. And I will say, that's the A team. And it isn't even favorites. It's just like, they're producing, they're shipping, they're making, they're setting aside their differences and they're working with empathy with developers. Cause it takes a lot to ship a thing.
Yeah.
Like it's not just like designers making cool presentations. Like there's so much more to it. There's like communication that goes on with product. There's concessions to made with it, be made with engineering. There's a whole litany of things that have to go into it that no one even taps the surface of what it is when they're like being interviewed or interviewing new candidates. It's an art form to get stuff out the door. And a lot of it is just this high desire to give a shit about what you're doing.
Yeah.
And it's not to say like, and that's the thing, like people always get their toes stepped on, like, well, who are you to say that I don't give a shit? And it's like, I mean, I'm just looking at the way that you show up on a daily basis and the amount of things that you're shipping. It stresses me out if I'm not shipping something.
Yeah.
Like just having a job is not security to me, but saying like, here's what we shipped, even if it's small.
Yep.
If it can show a trend in the right direction, it's a really big deal. And it's a narrative to kind of continue to speak and tell. And I think it's cyclical. It gives energy to the team because you get a UX team bought into the overarch, like the goal of what they're making. It's like they ship it and then they're watching the numbers. They're like, they're in there, like, you know, the analytics people are used to being alone and all the design people are like sitting in their chairs with them. Like, what's going on? How's this thing go? How's it convert? You know, where's the drop off?
Yep.
Ooh, in that screen. And like, okay, well, let's go back and fix that. And it's like this, they become bought in and they own this thing. It's not like a throw it over the fence ticket mentality, which is like the cancer of all of these big companies.
Yep.
You know, when you can build those types of people, like it's unstoppable.
Yeah.
I believe it's unstoppable.
I agree with you 100%. I mean, our company's kind of in that messy middle part of like trying to bring in executives to change how we've, you know, to evolve from just being a startup. But then there's a whole group of us that are the startup kids, you know, in a way. And we're constantly trying to bring what we've done and learned back into those models. And they don't work well at all.
No.
Like taking 3 days to do something to present. No, like that's a huge mistake. Have everybody in the conversation together, have them thinking about it together, over communicate, watch what happens when you do that. You know, like those are the things that you learn in the front lines of creating anything. Mm-hmm. And if you're not doing that, you're just wasting everybody's time. And maybe that will be one of the things that we see come out of this, people working remotely as entire organizations, is that I think that's the biggest insecurity as a remote person, is that you feel like nobody knows that you still exist. So you overly communicate, like you say, in Slack or email or whatever it is that you need to do to be like, hey, I'm still here. I'm still a part of it. Now that everybody's kind of even on not being in an office together, maybe we'll see a really good positive turn. And just a
hopefully a lot of vacant offices.
Yeah.
Honestly, hopefully it's just how it's just an unnecessary expense. Like, again, you and I were to start a company right now. Would an office even come into our brain?
No.
it's so far. I mean, unless we were selling like flowers, like in a retail space,
right,
that people, customers had to come into. But like just to have an office like with cool Eames chairs and like fancy lighting, like it's so stupid. It's such a waste of money. It's like, it doesn't, it's not, I'm sorry. It doesn't make any sense. Like I'll adapt to it. I'll go do it if it's needed.
Yeah.
But it, again, it's, I think it's, you know, for what we do, it's irresponsible.
Absolutely.
And I think of what a lot of people do. I mean, like if you're working in a factory and you're like intaking orders and you kind of like process them, like you can't do that from home,
right,
you know,
right.
You know, if you're roasting coffee beans, you can't do that, you know, from home, you need a place. That makes sense.
Yep.
There are areas that need retail spaces, but, or warehouse spaces, mm-hmm. but, the tools are getting so good. What we're doing right now is not any different than if we were in the same space together.
Yeah. And I do a podcast with somebody else, like where we're in the same space where we were.
Oh, that's cool.
And
we're cheating on me. That's side. Just kidding.
But,
yeah, I do podcasts with like 7 other people too. Cause I have all the time in the world to do podcasts.
Well, that one's more like about like, economic development in a small town type of thing. Yeah. But,
no, I'm just,
but what's funny with that podcast. One is that the energy level is not any different from you and I 3,000 miles apart over a video call or sitting across each other from each other at a table.
Yeah.
And so to me, that just forever emphasizes that office spaces are not needed to have good collaboration, good conversation, and excitement. You know,
if people use the tools and they get them, they have to master them, you know,
mm-hmm.
like go to a room where I can hear you. Like, don't use your phone to Zoom necessarily,
right.
You know, like I don't need to see a picture of your mouth. I don't know. It's an art, it's a craft, and it's been really healthy.
Well, I hope everybody gives it more.
I like being around people.
Yeah.
I like being around people. And so, but I find myself extremely distracted and not as productive in an office.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's hard for me.
Yeah, it is for me too. And hopefully people give it more than these couple weeks, these mandatory couple weeks at least, to give this a shot, because judging a Zoom conference call or a Google Hangout, right now, until you learn how to pause and allow for conversation and not talk over each other. And, you know, there's an art form of having a big group video chat, you know?
I noticed that too, like with certain people that are leading these Zoom calls, they just monologue for 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Cause I think they feel the pressure to fill the void.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is because we use Microsoft Teams and you can't see everybody's faces.
Mm-hmm.
So you get four people on the screen if their cameras are on, and then you get these teeny little boxes at the bottom and people recognize like, oh, I'm just gonna, and people don't turn on their cameras. And so when you're talking into a computer and you don't see anybody else's faces and you don't have any of that nonverbal communication, it does a thing to you where you feel like you just have to keep going.
Yeah.
And in person, like you would never do that. I mean, unless you're a jerk,
mm-hmm.
you would never do that in person. Like you have pauses and elbow bumps and, you know, hugs and all those things that go on. I believe you can replicate that through seeing everybody's faces.
I would agree. Yeah. Hey, thanks for listening to the episode. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. Really excited to share the next episode with you. Until then, enjoy your week and we'll see you soon.